What role will Australia play at a global level in the future? Will we all be driving with our little bottles of milk next to us on the car seat with the strap around it? What role do we actually play at a global level now? The Prime Minister would like us to be seen as a middle-level power, but what does that mean? As a young country, where do we lead and where do we fall behind? Great to hear from you about this afternoon. 19774774 is the text message number, but with me in the chamber, Sharon Burrows is the Secretary of the ACTU. Sharon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
John Langmore, who's the former UN ambassador, politician and currently professorial fellow in political science, sociology and criminology at University of Melbourne. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lindy.
And congratulations on having the longest title out of the entire panel.
I apologise for that.
No, it's tremendous. Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Lindy.
Tony Moclair, comic writer and comedian. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Lindy. I feel like I need to bow to you because you're in the Speaker's chair.
I am sitting in the Speaker's chair. Bowing would be completely acceptable. And Alex Zahov-Reut, who is with technology website itwire.com. Alex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So as a young country, as I was mentioning, John, where do we lead and where do we fall behind in terms of a global entity, if you like?
Well, we've fallen behind very badly in the last decade or so. When the two threats to humankind are climate change and nuclear weapons, and we took no action at all to speak of about climate change and very little about nuclear weapons. And I'm very glad to say the new Prime Minister is trying to take action on both of those.
Why do you think we fell behind? Is it because of allegiances to other countries or some just decisions that were made at a high political level?
Yeah, the previous government had decided to follow whatever the Bush administration wanted and did so, and they were opposed to action on climate change, and they regarded themselves as being so militarily dominant that they didn't have to take any action about nuclear weapons except to oppose Iran getting them and North Korea getting them.
You actually raise an interesting point about where we'll be by 2020 and what sort of allegiances we may have developed or encouraged by that time, and whether that will be incredibly different to what it is now. Do you think it will be?
No, I don't. I think we'll still be in close alliance with the United States, but I hope we'll be speaking the truth to them, not simply doing what they want, identifying our own interest and articulating that with some independence. But we'll still want to be close to China, to Japan, to ASEAN, to the countries of the Pacific, to Europe, as the Prime Minister has just shown.
Can we walk that line?
Yes, we can.
Of course. Will they still take us seriously?
Of course, as long as we act responsibly. And one of the problems during the last 10 years is we didn't even bother to attend some of the UN meetings, for example, that were discussing these things. And that antagonised Europe in relation to climate change. It antagonised the developing countries in relation to their principal concern, which is reduction of poverty and economic growth. We need to be active in those areas. And Rudd, I'm glad to say, is picking up that baton.
Do you think, Stephen, that it's actually going to change in some way, because you and I have already discussed this on a regular basis, that the world has become a smaller place? What the fallout from the subprime crash in the United States has affected us, when in the past perhaps that may not have been the case because markets were sort of much more enclosed within each country. But that's going to become more and more the case now.
That's right. Well, this is the world's first global liquidity crisis. And basically the US have exported a terrible financial virus to the world with what's probably going to finish up being $1 trillion of losses on US home loans. So yeah, we are now more integrated than ever before, and the big question is whether, you know, the world is catching cold because of the US, but can China sort of decouple, is the word they use, from the US, and can it save Australia? Now, we're one of the few countries in the world still growing at 3% plus. Our exports to China, coal up, you know, 200%, iron ore about to rise 70%. We are being saved in many respects by China, but the US has caused the world a very serious cold, and we are seeing it still unfold at the moment, and we're being hit very hard. I mean, we've got $1 trillion of household debt. We're having more collapses, Opus Primes and Allcos and MFSs, than other comparable countries because we're too indebted.
But does that mean that, therefore, in the future, that the relationship that we have with various countries, whether that be the US, China, Burma, whoever it might be, will be not necessarily based around a political arrangement, but perhaps a business one?
I think that we will move more to business relationships. Our relationship with China, particularly under John Howard, was driven by business, that they were taking a pile of our minerals, and we sort of turned a blind eye to the traditional human rights and issues like that, which we would normally not have much in common with China. So I think in a globalised world, with the trade rising and the global financial system, things will be driven, relationships will be driven more by commercial and trading relationships, and hopefully we'll see global institutions rise more effectively to deal with that, whether it's the UN, as John Langmore mentions, or the WTO to deal with the trade issues. And I think it would be better to see less bilateral arrangements, like specific agreements with individual countries, and more global arrangements to deal with a globalised financial and commercial world.
We'll see what the others on the panel have to say about that prospect in just a moment. And also keen to hear from you, 19774774 is the text message number if you would like to take part. Rochelle has been checking those out. Rochelle.
SMSs have come in, Lindy. We'll be talking about technology a little later on. One saying, I don't have a TV and my relationship with my family has never been better. Technology might be a part of life, but how much do we benefit from it socially?
Mm-hmm.
And the news headlines, the Victorian government will lower speed limits as it approaches 72 level crossings around Victoria. And police are also concerned about the welfare of a missing 13-year-old boy from Craigieburn in Melbourne's north. Police believe the boy left home overnight, boarded for the city, and he had little money and was only wearing his pyjamas and white runners. The weather for tomorrow, a top of 21, morning drizzle patches followed by a fine and partly cloudy afternoon, light to moderate south-southwesterly winds. And if you do want to send us a text, 19774774.
Brad's got some traffic. Brad.
I certainly have, Lindy, and we've got dramas on the Calder Freeway. Now, Calder outbound is a car park from the Tullacalder interchange to past Keilor Drive due to a four-car accident at Keilor Park Drive. And Aaron said, P.S., why don't you ever mention the Calder and traffic reports? Well, because they're in the primitive system we have here to do the traffic, doesn't go out that far, but that's why I keep saying the number, 19774774 or 9626 1768. That's our numbers, and you can let me know what's happening in the traffic, just like Aaron did. Everything else seems to be running to time, except for trains that are running on the Werribee line at the moment. A few delays there due to an equipment fault. Everything else is up to scratch. As is your good self, Lindy, out there at the 2020 summit. Are you enjoying yourself?
Very much so.
Oh, good.
Yes,
Will.
I've taken away. My head is actually crammed.
Fantastic.
It's scary.
You're up to date now with the traffic on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, Richard Stubbs.
Have you ever visited a place just because of its name? Hi, Peter. Where'd you go?
Anarchy.
From 1 p.m. each weekday.
Once went to Intercourse in Pennsylvania. Nothing happened. Very disappointed. Thank you for that SMS.
Richard Stubbs.
Whereabouts did you go?
Timbuktu.
Woolly Dooley and Waidikidido.
Richard Stubbs.
Richard, I'm going to Lamington National Park in Queensland because it sounds like a delicious place to visit.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
The 2020 Summit, live from Parliament House, Melbourne, on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Just on 25 past five, Sharon Burrows from the ACTU is sitting with us on the panel this afternoon as well. And I'm wondering, Sharon, if you think we should be trying to set ourselves up as a middle-level power at a global level.
Look, Australia has a great capacity to influence the world. We were once respected, as John said, right through the international system, bilaterally but multilaterally in particular. Stephen's right about the importance of multilateral rules, if you like, a fair set of rules for a globalised world. We lost that respect. The way that Australia can be influential is to demonstrate, by and large, what you can do. We're a land of migrants. We can be proud of our diversity again. We can go out into the world speaking out against threats for people. And I might add, John's absolutely right about climate change and nuclear weapons. But can I also say there's one thing he kind of skipped over, and that's really the threat to fair globalisation if, in fact, you have corporate greed on the scale we've seen it, as Stephen just raised. And I'll just say this, more than half of the world's workforce earns less than $2 a day, less than $2 US a day, and overwhelmingly the majority are in our region, in the Asia Pacific. So when you think about that massive corporate greed driving this globalisation, and then you add to it the subprime crisis and the global credit crunch and all of the devastation of today. Why did that come about? Two reasons. One, greedy corporates selling financial packages they knew were not affordable, wrapping them up with a big red bow in AAA packages and selling them around the world, securitising them with all of our money. But the reason it fell apart is because people in the US, working people, couldn't earn enough to pay their mortgages. And we've got some of those indications right here in Australia. So yes, we have to integrate and engage with the world, because that's what globalisation is delivering us, and some of it's got great opportunities, but we must do it on the basis of rights, rights for working people, human rights, a decent set of aspirations for a fair set of rules to underpin globalisation. And the UN itself says that fair globalisation equals full employment and decent work with rights. And the final thing I'd say about Australia is so optimistic is that we still have a robust democracy. Last year, Australians threw out John Howard, not altogether in total because of, but in large part because of an attack on the fundamental rights of working Australians. They said, this is not good enough. We wanted a society for our children and grandchildren that's much fairer, much more secure, and that's what people all around the world want.
Thank you, Sharon. I just want to get a quick word from you, Tony, as well. I only got a couple of minutes before we actually go to a bulletin of news. But just, do you see Australia as actually needing to be a power, or in the end it's just going to kind of wash itself out anyway because of the way the globalisation is going?
That's probably what will happen. I wonder if this debate is going on in Canada, because they're still pretty similar to us, same sort of population, same kind of level of power in the world. It's really not something that, I don't know, does it keep a lot of people awake at night, our place in the world?
Does it really matter? Should we be looking just at what we're doing at home rather than worrying about how people see us from outside?
Exactly. Let's get youth binge drinking under control. That's the biggest thing our government needs to tackle first and foremost, obviously, judging by the papers.
The trouble is, though, if we do manage to do that, not even the trouble, but if we do manage to do that, perhaps that's something that we can be seen to be, because it's not an issue that's just going on in Australia. It's going along a lot in Western democracies across the world.
You're talking binge drinking.
I am talking binge drinking.
Were you drunk right now?
How are you getting through this? How do you not mention that? You terrible person. But if we can do that, then potentially if we get some of our own house in order, that further down the track that can be seen, rather than going out and spruiking our stuff, doing something at home that then can be seen as a bit of a role model for the rest of the world.
Exactly. I think getting out, well, it's like the thing that made Britain a great power. It got its own house in order first, before it then took over a third of the globe. That's what we need to do.
And we're bearing the repercussions of that still to this.
I'm advocating militarist imperialism for Australia. The next century could be ours.
You've actually raised an enormous can of... Can you raise can of worms? You've done something there. You've opened that can of worms. We've got people standing up wanting to make comment. We'll get comments from you as well if you'd like to send a text, 19774 774. Talking to Alex in just a moment and finding out exactly where we're going to be when it comes to technology, because in some ways technology might just completely override all of the ideas that we have about where we see ourselves as a global entity, because perhaps the globe might just end up being one single force. We'll talk about that with Alex in just a moment, but right now here at 774 ABC Melbourne and on ABC Victoria, it's time for your ABC News.
Yes, thank you, Lindy. The state government has conceded the state is having trouble attracting and recruiting qualified nurses. The Children's Hospital has been forced to cancel 30 cardiac operations on children so far this month. The hospital says it doesn't have enough nurses to staff intensive care beds. The Premier John Brumby says finding enough qualified nurses is difficult, and it's a problem facing hospitals around the world. The opposition leader, Brendan Nelson, has refused to comment on speculation. Senior Liberal Party members have given him a deadline to boost his approval rating. Opposition frontbencher Andrew Robb has hinted Dr. Nelson could have until next month's federal budget to prove himself to the party and the public. But Dr. Nelson says he's there for the long term. The speed limit will be lowered at dozens of level crossings around the state. It'll be reduced on the approach to most level crossings from 100 kilometres an hour to 80. The Public Transport Minister Lynn Koski says the speed reductions will begin this week. The state government says more than 2,000 jobs will be created in Geelong when an Indian information technology company sets up its Australian base there. The company will build the IT centre on Deakin University land, employing thousands of staff over the next 8 years. Morning drizzle, then fine and partly cloudy tomorrow, a low of 12 and a top of 21. Next news at 6.
Traffic update
on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Brad with the traffic, just thought I'd let that build a little. Lights on flash in Abbotsford at Victoria and River Street, the Domain Tunnel, two lanes and 60, the Burnley, three lanes open, 80k limit. Calder outbound is a car park, according to Erin. There has been a four-car accident at Keilor Park Drive. And we also have dramas at Thomastown, at Keilor Parade and Dalton Road. Cops on the scene there after an accident. Toll is a little rough between Racecourse Road and Brunswick Road as you head out of town and, into town. Out of town, there has been an accident on Buller Road on ramp at, on the freeway there. Sorry, I lost my mind. Westgate's slow to clear at Montague Street, but once you're on the bridge, you won't find too many holdups. Nepean Building through St Kilda Junction, a few patches on the highway, but generally not a bad run. Warrigal Road, Springvale Road, getting quite heavy now, as are Burwood Highway and Canterbury Road. Dandenong Road is slow, Chapel to Warrigal, and as you're heading into town, slow from Chapel into the city. Major delays on the Werribee line. Outbound trains will run via the Westona Loop and citybound trains will run express from Laverton to Newport, and Sandringham trains may be delayed up to 15 minutes in both directions. There's police operations on at Balaclava at the moment. If you've got any other information you'd like to share with me, please feel free to text on 19 774 774, or you can call me direct on 9626 1768. You're up to date now with the traffic on 774 ABC Melbourne and 774... I've just lost it. And Victoria. You know, it's a small bit under New South Wales between Tassie. Thanks very much.
The day we remember those who gave their lives for us and our country.
Anzac Day.
Start your day with Tonya Roberts for the traditional Anzac Day dawn service. Then from 8.30, John Fain will be at the Shrine of Remembrance for the Anzac Day March. Then the grandstand team will bring you all the pre-match entertainment live from the MCG, where Collingwood take on Essendon. Anzac Day 2008 on 774 ABC Melbourne and online at abc.net.au/Melbourne.
Just on 27 to 6, Lindy Burns here. Let's check the weather. Cloudy periods tonight with a light shower or two, light to moderate south to southwesterly winds. Then for tomorrow, some morning drizzle patches followed by a fine and partly cloudy afternoon, light to moderate southerly winds, 12 overnight, and a top tomorrow of 21. Frankston, 11 to 19. Geelong, 10 to 20. Then Wednesday, fine, 8 through to 20. Thursday, some early drizzle, 11 to 21. And Friday, fog, then fine, 11 through to 22 degrees. So we didn't see much rain over the weekend, at least not on my garden. Did anybody see any rain at their place? A bit up here. I was happy about that. At least someone got a bit. If you'd like to send a text message, 19 774 774 is the text message number. We'd love to hear from you about this. Not just because we're getting toward the end of the day, not just about this particular topic, but perhaps about some of the things that you've heard throughout the day. So if you'd like to make comment, use that text message number, 19 774 774. And if you're driving home now and you haven't heard much from the day and you'd like to know a bit more about it, you can go to the website. Yeah, that's straightforward, isn't it? abc.net.au/Melbourne. I logged on there a little early this morning so I could find out what Red and John were up to. Quite frankly, I was mind-boggled what was going on here earlier today. It's been very good since then. You're with Lindy Burns. I'm here at Parliament House, and it's a magnificent setting. It's where the green seats are. We're in the lower chamber, the lower house chamber, talking about Australia and its role in the global environment by 2020. With me, Sharon Burrows from the ACTU, John Langmore from the University of Melbourne, Tony Moclair, comic writer and comedian, Alex Zahohov-Reut from itwire.com, and Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist. We'll get some comments from you as well and send a text message on 19 774 774. Alex, technology may completely override all of our best intent when it comes to the way we want to see ourselves, because in the end it may just be a grassroots movement. If we think about Generation Y, we think about the YouTube, we think about Facebook, we think about the way in which communication is done, could that potentially almost take over the best intentions that governments may have?
Well, one of the most important things we need with our communications in Australia is to have communications available to all. We don't just want to be the clever country, but the connected country. And at the moment, we've got the federal government talking about a broadband fibre network. There is a tender process happening at the moment, which is going to take at least 5 years for this thing to be built, according to what I've seen in the press. And unfortunately, this network, fortunately or unfortunately, it appears that Telstra is going to be the only company that can possibly win this tender. And so where does that leave us in the future for competitive pricing? If we have one company that is building this network and we don't have a lot of competition, then we might be the most connected country on the planet, but nobody can afford it. So it's going to be an issue in that regard. Things like video conferencing are going to be taking over. If planes are too expensive to fly and they're causing too much damage, and Richard Branson doesn't get his biofuels thing happening for the planes, then global business isn't going to stop. We're going to be needing to have a lot of video conference meetings with customers all over the world. And we also need to not only support a lot of the things happening, for example, in the gaming industry. We have a massive gaming industry here in Australia, but even in the news we were hearing about how this Indian company wants to set up in Australia and have a technology arm over here. We need to invite more countries to come and work here. We need to be encouraging a lot of technological development in Australia so we can export that knowledge to the world. And a lot of it will be underpinned by a broadband network that works both on wired and wireless, and it needs to be affordable.
Stephen.
Alex, I couldn't agree more with you about the need to develop the technology in Australia, but one of our great failings as a nation, if you look at our top 100 companies, there isn't a single IT company in there. So many of our successful companies have, government licences or they're domestically focused. And I reckon the IT sector is the worst example. I mean, we're hopeless in some regards. We're the biggest island in the world without a shipping company. We're a nation of tourists without a global hotel brand. There's a whole range of things you can say, but IT is the worst.
That's probably...
Why don't we produce great IT companies when we're great IT consumers and we take it up so readily?
That's because of the brain drain. All of the smart people have gone off to Silicon Valley and overseas to work for companies in the US or elsewhere, where there's been more funding, more money, more appreciation, more venture capital funds. And if a lot of that funding is going to be drying up, then hopefully some of these brains will come back and develop here in Australia. And we need, I guess, both government support and industry support to really rev up our IT industry.
Sharon?
But we have a big problem with intellectual property, full stop. We're very good at research and at innovation, but we don't put the effort in to see it commercialised. We don't price appropriately innovation to commercialisation. If we don't do that with climate change solutions, we won't have those goodies to export to the world. Our skills base is also frighteningly deficient. We stopped investing in skills somewhere around 1998 with freezing funds to TAFE colleges. We've got 500,000 young Australians not in full-time study or work. This country can do much better. We were on the upward curve. We just dropped the ball in the 90s. We had a government that wasn't interested. Leave it to the market. Let's not get engaged. And we've got to do better for ourselves, but also for those aspirational pieces about engaging in our neighbourhood.
Rochelle, you have a person from the audience?
Yeah, I'm with Sarah. Now, Sarah, you teach at university within regional Victoria. I mean, what do you think of this conversation that's going on now?
I think it's a real issue of social justice. And Australia, I think, at its peril, is becoming so urbanised that smaller rural communities are becoming disenfranchised. And ultimately, cities like Melbourne will implode on themselves because you can't get any bigger. And the IT issue has got the potential to really bring us together as a country. But if you exclude people because they don't have access to good IT, or they can't afford it, as Sharon was saying, because they can't have a living wage, we do it at our own peril.
I'm wondering, too, at a global level whether that's a huge issue, because there are countries, too, John, that don't have access to anything in those terms.
Yeah, that's true, but let's deal with Australia first. As Sharon says, we haven't been spending nearly enough on education or research, and we certainly shouldn't be spending more on military activity. If we want to maximise our rate of our well-being, then we must build up universities, technical colleges, and research institutes so that we have the skills and the capacity to innovate much more effectively.
Nice.
We've got organisations like the CSIRO who've developed the wireless technology we use on our laptops. They're developing smarter batteries that can power electric cars. But it's not just information technology, but a lot of the climate change. We've got all the solar. Why isn't Australia a leader in solar power technology?
Absolutely.
Why aren't we a leader in water technologies? I mean, we've been doing this for 100 years, and yet we buy a lot of technology from other countries. It's a great shame.
And we starve our scientists.
We do starve it, and I think that we've been talking a lot today, a number of people who've actually come out who are on the negative side of those. Hello, hello. Oh, the speaker's microphone went off. Maybe someone else pressed that. Premier Brumby. But people who have been sort of almost disenfranchised in a way, they're on the negative side of the ledger, not just in terms of funding, but in terms of respect within the community and encouragement within the community. And I think you're right about scientists falling on that side, and that's something we just can't allow to continue to happen. Tony.
I just want to ask Stephen something. In the US, the government over there broke up the Bell Company to ensure fair competition for consumers of telecommunications. Could we see something like the government doing that here? Because Telstra is effectively a 300-pound gorilla that controls internet broadband. Could we see the government muscling up to the company and effectively forcing it into several separately owned divisions and enforcing competition?
I think that would be a wonderful outcome. One of the great travesties of the structure of corporate Australia is the concentration of power. Countries like the UK and the US have forced divestiture laws where they break up the Standard Oils and they rein in the Microsofts and these guys who go too far. And we have, you know, very few countries have a Qantas, which has a majority share. Very few countries have a Telstra. Our bank oligopoly just strangles business. We've got a duopoly on the ports. Our construction sector is so controlled by Leighton's, which is a German-controlled company. So I think Telstra, totally agree, and right across the broader sector, if we could break up the corporate power that is so concentrated in Australia, it would allow more innovation and more flowers to bloom, because successful corporates in Australia tend to be, they dominate their home market, they've got some sort of government mandate, some sort of government licence, and they just make fat profits here, and they don't grow and take over the world, which is the culture we should be encouraging.
Back with a couple of other comments from the panel in a moment, but firstly to Gwenda, is it?
Lindy, and I was interested to know what the panel might think about Australia. It relates in a way to Tony's humorous comments at the end, but that Australia would need to be perhaps very careful in the what some describe as the aid and development industry or the NGO structure and AusAid, that it's not imposing models of everything to be done on the Pacific countries in particular, because there's the need to truly listen when we're the bigger equivalent to the US sheriff,
yes,
in other ways, and they have that opinion of us to some extent. And when we come to the issue of climate refugees coming here, the whole problem that for them and what we are going to do. But just, I think we need to be very concerned about that we're truly listening to our Pacific region neighbours and what they feel and their opinions, and not have things imposed on them. There's been some marvellous works done by academics at ANU and Deakin about this, and I wondered if there
was, I think John probably has a comment here. Good points, Gwenda. Thank you, John.
Yeah, I completely agree. One size does not fit all. Every country is different. The circumstances in every country have to be built into the kind of aid that we offer, and we must listen to them about what kind of aid they want. But we should be building up our aid, by the way. It's still frightfully mean. And if we were, it's 0.3% of national income. Rada's promise 0.5%, and the UN target is 0.7. We're far below the average and that target. We should be building it up, as Sharon says.
Well, it's interesting, a number of points that were raised earlier today. I think it was John Fain who asked the people who were gathered within the room whether or not they thought that we were a greedy society, that we weren't generous enough at an individual level and at a country level, and the overwhelming answer was yes. And perhaps if nothing else has come out of today, that's one of it that we can all take away with us to try and think about what we want to do at a personal level, and then potentially exponentially out from that at a corporate and political level. Ian Henderson is, of course, the newsreader for ABC News and ABC One this evening. Hendo, good evening.
This isn't Hendo, this is Brad doing a Hendo impersonation.
You just want to take over the entire show. I don't know what it is about
you. I've just popped on a suit. Hendo's here now.
Is he really?
Puff, puff. Now, you've had lots of good ideas today, Lindy.
Yeah, I'm hoping we're leading the bulletin.
Yeah, well, you might have scooped us, I think. We're planning on doing the 2020 a little later.
But this is the real one.
Yeah, I know.
All right, what have
okay, we're getting to know our Governor-General a little better today.
Yeah, good.
She's spoken about her agenda for Indigenous Australia and disabled youngsters. A little bit cagey on the Republic, though.
And that surprises me.
Yeah. You don't write anything serious in your work emails, do you, Linda?
No, never. No. Except those love letters I sent to you. But well, talk about those,
yeah,
right?
No, you shouldn't be talking about them on radio.
Sorry.
Goodness gracious me. Anyway, look, a few people are a little bit hot under the collar about that idea that the government's come forward with to sort of combat cyber terrorism, saying it's a invasion of our privacy. So we're having a bit of a look at that. Interesting day in the courts too. Mr. X from the team that hit Lewis Moran is up giving evidence today. It's the first time he's spoken. He's an insider who's turned, we can't name him, but he's turned against Carl Williams and Tony Mockbell and has had a lot to say today. So that one's well worth listening to. And the sequel to the a long 18 months after the G20 riots. Those 10 people were dealt with today and got a variety of things thrown at them. Now, things you must see today, the new Olympic uniforms.
Oh, really? Okay. Are they terrible?
Well, let's say they're what you call figure-hugging in a variety of green and gold. But I don't know how you feel about green and gold. I mean, I know they're the national colours, but I think, you know, would you want to be seen in green and gold the whole time?
No.
And they do get a little bit of relief from that in their casual outfits. But anyway, have a look, see what you think. And also the pictures that you must see tonight of 6 Maasai warriors taking part in the London Marathon.
Are they wearing the Olympic uniform of Australia?
They are not.
It's a shame. They are wearing
recycled car tyres on their feet and doing the marathon that way. Quite
remarkable.
Extraordinary pictures, and they're hopping their way through a marathon. So
terrific.
Hop to it. Watch the news tonight.
Thank you, Hendo. Ian Henderson, ABC One, 7 o'clock tonight. Brad.
Thank you, Lindy.
The perpetual Brad.
Yes, always here. Accident with 4 cars has blocked the left lane on the Eastern Freeway outbound between Blackburn Road and Springvale Road. Get over to the right lanes as early as you can. Blackburn Road itself is now at a crawl southbound from Waverley Road, and allow more time on your train trip on the Werribee Line, Geelong Lines and the Sandringham Lines. You're up to date now with the traffic and the trains on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Thank you very much, Brad. Rochelle, how are those text messages?
19774 774 is the number. There's a few, Lindy. Limited technology restricts us from moving to the country. My partner is a graphic and web designer. We can't live on the farm I was brought up in because of technology limitations. Another saying, I question whether connecting us with the global world in terms of IT means that we lose connection with the local community.
That's an interesting point. Thank you for that. It's 11:26. Derek along very soon. He's having dinner tonight. How he got to have dinner while he was having his summit and I didn't. I have to, even afternoon tea. I know I promised cake because it's my birthday. But no, I did not bring cake and neither did anybody else. But that's okay. I'll move on. It's okay. I'm fine. I had a special guest with me this afternoon looking at Australia's global role now and in the future by 2020 and also looking at the way in which technology is going to change the way we are. John Langmore, Sharon Burrows, Tony Moclair, Alex Zaharov-Royt and Stephen Mayne with me. Tony, you've been remarkably quiet for you.
Oh, sorry about that.
Which country do you think we should align ourselves with, if anyone, by 2020? More so than we perhaps are doing right now.
North Korea, because I think we have broadband that's about as quick as theirs. Yeah, that's the way I'd go. And can you imagine how much fun the summits would be? I'd love to do the interpreting to know what crazy stuff comes out of Kim Jong-il's mouth.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. I'm glad I asked you that question.
That's all right. Are you sorry you asked me?
A little. Alex, you were going to make a comment a little earlier.
Yes, well, we were talking about structural separation with Telstra, and there's been a call for structural separation, but of course the problem is that Telstra has been privatised, and so unless you have government action, how do you do that? New Zealand has had structural separation, where the government, we all own the network, and the retail arm can be, you know, fought against by all the competitors that we currently have. And if we own the network, then a lot of work can be done there, which doesn't rely upon one company's commercial ideals. We've got a lot of things happening when Telstra was government-owned. The other countries were looking towards us for fibre, to see what we were doing with fibre rollouts and other things. There's also the issue that's popped up of censorship of the internet. We've got Minister Conroy from the federal government wanting to censor the internet. It's to protect us against pedophiles, but it sounds like a very weak excuse to censor the internet for everybody, and they say that, oh, we're not going to be like China. But then we've also got this email snooping thing that's in the news today, where the government wants to give itself the ability to snoop on anybody's email without your approval. And, I mean, what are we turning into, a totalitarian state? This is Australia, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah. Any comments from the floor? On side with Alex's point or nay? If you say, if you agree, say yay. Or mini yay. If you disagree, say nay. No, so we have a mini yay it is.
strongly agree.
Strongly agree from John. And Sharon, I saw nodding her head emphatically there as well. Geraldine is up in our audience. Geraldine.
Thank you, Lindy. Lindy, what I wanted to say was we cannot, as a nation, underestimate our potential to both lead and to partnership in this region. And whilst we do that, we must also take great care not to exploit that greed or to encourage exploitation. We've got to bring that balance back. If we do not, we have a potential to lead strategically. We can build partnerships. We have that potential. Not just, we tend to underestimate our potential and the value of it and the essential need for this. If we do this, it is to our own peril. Of course, we've got our home problems and everything else, but we're a free country. We can lead, first and foremost, lifestyle peace. Look at on my street. Whilst there might, we've got warring countries, we live as neighbours on my street. Mm. Believe it or not, it's true. It's not fabricated. Mm. Whilst all this is happening, we're all neighbours here. We have a lot to give, a lot to share, and in that, we need to focus inwardly. We're not looking after our children, as in creating jobs, growing skills, growing our intelligence, and sustaining our young ones here, and that's very important because we can partner but not sell off Australia. If we don't manufacture, if we don't move towards also a balance and self-sustaining, we'll be lost.
Geraldine, very good points, and I think probably a round of applause here. Thank you very much. John?
I strongly agree. We need a rule-based international system in which we're attempting through diplomatic action to play a role in mediating conflicts and trying to find peaceful solutions to conflicts.
Do you think that sometimes, though, that we think that we're too young a country to have anything relevant to say, that people won't take us seriously?
Yeah, I think we do put ourselves down sometimes. And somebody, I think Stephen said, we must get our internal human rights right before we start recommending those to other people. But we have to do both those things simultaneously. And we could be playing a more active role in peacekeeping, for example. There's a genocide going on in Darfur. We could be contributing more peacekeepers to that place. Why are we sending 20 there and 1,000 to Afghanistan? It doesn't make sense.
Sharon?
Well, I think you've got two extraordinarily wise women here. They're talking about being good neighbours. And one of the ideas I'll be taking to the regional Australia and the world and Australia and our regional discussion on the weekend is a good neighbours program. We would do more good to invest in actually a dialogue between neighbours, civil society, not just government, civil society, and the diaspora that we are rich in here with our neighbouring countries, to understand their aspirations and then to build a new development model in partnership. I can tell you, if we cut a little bit off defence and put that little bit into dialogue, we would feel a lot more secure and a lot more generous as a nation, willing to help our neighbours. So good on you too. And I just want to go back to Stephen and say, it astonishes me that all this, you know, this bullshy talk from business about leave it to the market, free market, and yet you talked about competition policy earlier. Why is it that the ACCC, that our competition policy is focused purely on the supply side? Where do we get consumer competition? And the banks, my current target, are absolutely in front there. They simply hide, do everything to disguise the cost of banking. They're not responsible for their consumers. They're ready to default on mortgages rather than looking at creative solutions about shared equity and responsibility, you know, mortgage holidays, whatever it takes. So the corporate greed notion and leave it to the market seems to me a little bit like giving this world the access to the cookie jar rather than really being genuine about competition and how markets intersect with a decent development model and a fair set of rules for a trading globe.
Stephen, I've got just 1 minute.
Well, leave it to the market is interesting. The earlier comment as well about don't sell off Australia. People don't realise how much Australia has been sold off, that we have the world's most imbalanced performance on foreign ownership. There are 250 foreign companies turning over more than $200 million a year in Australia. that the Australian government owns less business assets than the Chinese government and the Singapore government own in Australia. So I think we have, like very few other countries, left it to the market very much. And on the banking sector, I agree. No one stands up for consumers. We're all getting ripped off, and I think that's regulatory failure. So, Sharon, you know, I'm with you. But I also think unions have got
some historic partnership.
An incredibly historic partnership. I expected you two to come to blows at some point. Thank you so much. Tony, have you got a comment?
Well, just one question, Sharon. You can't cut defence spending and then ask for more peacekeepers. It doesn't work that way.
Well, you can if you have a broader view of what defence means. If it means genuinely, of course, a military base, but if it also means peacekeepers, much better idea than actually sending in people with guns. And if it means good neighbours in terms of dialogue and understanding, then, hey, we've got a defence package. That is a much better way for the world to develop.
Can I please ask you to thank Sharon Burrush, John Langmore, Tony Moclair, Alex Zaharov-Royt and Stephen Mayne for this discussion this afternoon. Danny Katz, good comment from you.
Look, Australia is safe. We are, that's what I think. And, you know, being like Canada is not such a bad thing. It's fine to be innocuous and irrelevant. And people like you. And all Australia needs to do is get themselves a syrup. Speaking as a Canadian, get your own syrup, a golden syrup or something, celebrate it.
But save the seals.
Yeah, why did you have to bring that up? What a sad way to finish.
Thank you, Danny Katz. Can you please thank Danny's contribution to this afternoon? Derek Gill is sitting in the studios ready for this evening. Hello, Derek.
Happy birthday, Madam Speaker.
Oh, thank you so very much. I'm a little perturbed you got to have the dinner, though.
Well, it's the Australian way of doing things, Lindy. As you know, you spend the day digesting the information that comes through the news services and the current affairs programs. In our case, you digest the information from the summit that we've been having all day today on ABC Radio across the state. And then you sit down with your mates over a glass of red, and you know, in summer it would be with a sandwich or a steak or something, and you basically solve the problems of the world.
You chew
the fat a bit, as Redmond said this morning. So that's what we're going to do. We'll do the typical Australian thing. At the end of the day, we'll sort out all of the issues. What are the important ones? What's the sort of stuff that needs to happen now? What happens next? Which are the ones that we ought to put the focus on? What government changes, what business changes, all those sorts of things that need to happen.
Terrific.
We'll talk about that tonight.
Lovely. After 7 o'clock.
After 7 o'clock.